Morning. Today's daf and erchin is Yud Ches. We are back on Yud Zayin. We're a little bit behind. We just started yesterday the fourth parak of the Masechta. Let's recap. The fourth parak of the Masechta, we are now going to get into erchin. I know it's daf Yud Zayin, it's daf Yud Ches. We're going to get into erchin. We've been here for over 2 weeks. But as you know, the second and third parak took a little bit of a detour. And so we took a bit of a drive throughout other areas of halacha, but now we're back. As we started yesterday, the fourth parak of the Masechta, we're back to discussing erchin topics within erchin, and the Mishnah yesterday rattled off four halachas when it comes to erchin. If you look back in the Mishnah, in the beginning of the parak, in Yuzayinam and Aleph, so the Mishnah says that Hesigad has been noder, that in terms of giving somebody a special assessment, he makes an erchin pledge. Let's say the maximum 50 shkalim, he doesn't have 50 shkalim, so he gets a special assessment. So that's noder. That's going to be based on his financials. Meaning, let's say he's ma'arich somebody else. Let's say he wants to give the erich of another individual. Doesn't matter. Meaning, as far as a special assessment, a special consideration, so we're going to go based on his financials, not on anyone else's financials. Hashanim benidar, in terms of the age, whose age are we concerned with? His age or the person that he's being ma'arich? So it's obviously going to be the object, or I should say better, the subject. Meaning, if he's ma'arich another person, so we're gonna look at the age of the other person, not his own age. Ha'erchim b'nerach, in terms of gender. So we're gonna look at once again the nerach, the person who is the subject of the erech. And finally, erech b'zman erech. And then in terms of which age we're gonna choose, we're going to freeze frame the moment that he actually made the erech pledge. Those are the four halachas that we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah went into a machlokis between the Tanakhama and Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. Tanakhama says that if, let's say, for example, you have a person who's poor who gives the erchin of somebody who's wealthy. So in that case, you're going to be following the financials of the person who made the erich pledge, the noder. Good. It's the first point of the Mishnah. And in that, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi said, I'm sorry, and on that, the Tanakhama says, b'karbanos ena kein. But it's not the same thing when it comes to a karban. And as we discussed yesterday, when we're talking about the parallel cases of erchin and karbanos, we're talking specifically about a karban mitzara, and the halacha goes as follows. When a person concludes his tzaras, and he goes now through the purification process, so it starts with a pair of birds on day one, and then he's going to go through 7 days of tahara, and then on day eight, he's going to bring another series of karbanos, three karbanos in total. He's going to bring one karban asham, and then a chatas and an olah. The karban asham has to be an animal. That's clear. The chatas and the olah, so if he's wealthy, he'll bring another pair of animals, totaling three animals. If he's poor, if he's below the poverty line, so then instead of bringing a pair of animals, he's going to bring two birds. One's going to be a chatas, and the other one's going to be an olah. Okay, and so basically when it comes to the mitzvah, you have this also distinction between being an usher, being an ani. Usher, by the way, here in this case, doesn't mean wealthy, just simply means you're above the poverty line. So so there's a difference between being an usher and an ani. Now, in the case of tzaras, we can also have a scenario where we can divide the person sponsoring and the person who is actually obligated. Right? The person who's actually obligated, obviously, is a mitzvah himself. And then you can also have another person looking over his shoulder saying, you know what? I want to bring his karbanos. So fine, so you can have this model just like the Erech model. Yes, it's a little bit strange. Somebody's going to want to be giving tzaras karbanos when he himself is not obligated. I suggested yesterday that maybe he's sponsoring the person who wants to bring the karbanos. In any event, so you can have this kind of model just like we have by Erech. By Erechin, you have the person making the neder, and you have the subject of which it's about. By Mitzora, you can construct such a scenario. What the Tanakhama is telling us is that when it comes to Erechin and Tzaras, they're not the same. Right? That's what he means when he says, Aval b'karbanos eno kein. All right? Because Haresha Amar, I'm going back to the Mishnah, I'm just chazering the Mishnah. Haresha Amar, karbanos eno mitzora, zeh alai, haya mitzora, ani, mevi, karban ani. Asher, mevi, karban asher. When a person is sponsoring a Mitzora's karbanos, so according to the Tanakhama, you know what you're going to give, you're going to be giving whatever the mitzvah is. If the mitzvah is an ani, you're going to be giving karban ani. If the mitzvah is an asher, you're going to be giving karban asher. Meaning it doesn't follow erchim. By erchim, we follow the financials of the noder. In the case of tzaras, we're going to be following the financials of the actual mitzvah himself. Okay. That is the point of the Tanakhama. In the Mishnah, along came Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says, I don't understand how you can compare those two cases. They're not comparable. In the case of Erchin, when you have the person making the pledge and you have the subject of the pledge isn't obligated anything, meaning he's just simply a subject. When you have Tsaras, the person, the Mitzvah himself is obligated, and the Madir, and the one who is now obligating himself to give those kabbalas also now is going to become obligated. So the cases aren't parallel with one another. In fact, Rav Yehuda Nasi said in the Mishnah, once the cases become parallel, they're exactly identical. Meaning, consider, says Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, we have a scenario in which a person who is an usher says, I'm going to give my own erech. Along comes a poor person and says, oh, that obligation, I want to take upon myself that obligation. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says it's going to be the same, meaning even though he's an ani, but now that he's piggybacking on somebody who has to bring 50 shkalim, he himself has to bring 50 shkalim, it's no longer, he's not going to be given any kind of special assessment. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, once the cases become similar to one another, then they're exactly identical. Okay, that is the Mishnah that we saw yesterday. And on that, the Gemara touched up on some of the issues in the Mishnah, the language of the Mishnah, why the Mishnah is using the word noder as opposed to ma'arich, meaning we're talking about erchin over here. The Gemara dealt with that yesterday. Let's pick it up now on Yuzayin Amid Aleph at the two dots. And right where we left off yesterday, a little bit above where we left off yesterday. Hesigya benoder ketzadani she'erich hasashir nosin erichani. My time, I'm a crusher, tasigya na noder. Benoder tel erachmana. Okay, fine. So when it comes to erichin, so it follows a noder. Meaning, so by erichin, if I am going to be giving the erich of so-and-so, somebody other than me, it's my financials. Fine. So the Gemara says, v'afagav de madir asher. Let's think about this regarding Mitzora. Meaning, it's hard to understand. You have a Mitzora who himself is poor. Along comes another person and says, I'm committing myself to his karbanos. Okay, but in other words, but if the Madir, the one making the pledge by the karbanos of the Mitzora, if the Madir is wealthy, why is he given a special dispensation? He can afford the more expensive karbanos. So, v'im dalhu amarechmanav lo dalhu. And in fact, I don't even understand. The Torah says, when are you afforded a special dispensation by the karbanos of Mitzora? When you're poor. If the Madir is not poor, so then why should he be bringing the karbanos of a poor person? So I'm Rav Yisrael Kishayam Madir Ani. So the Gemara first offers the following suggestion. You know what the case is in the case of Tsaras, where the Mitzora himself is an Ani and the Madir is an Ani? So the two of them are Aniyim. So therefore, the Mitzora is going to be qualified to give the lesser karbanos because he's poor. And so is the Madir, because he too is poor. So the Gemara says, V'dema la'di de'chas rachmana, Madir lo, V'dehaksiv hu. So the Gemara says, I don't even know if you're right about that. Meaning, let's also consider this case. In such a scenario where I have the Mitzvah being poor and the Madir also being poor, the Torah says that he is poor, meaning it's the word who is a limitation, and seemingly the dispensation is only for the actual Mitzvah himself and not for any sponsor of the Karban. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ada Rav Ava Inya Adoma Segas Rabba Sasa Noder. The Gemara says, yeah, but we're going to go back to the Pasuk. And within the Pasuk, you see clearly that we have two expressions in the Pasuk. We have the Imdalhu, and we also have the expression of Inya Adoma Segas. So we are now saying that since we have that additional expression, so it comes not only to include the actual Mitzvah himself, but the Madir as well, the sponsor of the Karbanos. Ava Madir Asher Hachanami Demaisi Bashiros. So the Gemara says, okay. So based on what we're saying, here's our outline when it comes to Mitzora. If my Mitzora is poor, and the sponsor is poor, so then they get to bring, right, the sponsor gets to bring, the Madir gets to bring the cheaper Karbanos. Good. What we're also saying now is that if the Mitzora is poor, and the Madir is wealthy, so he has to bring the more expensive Karbanos. Gemara now says, if you think about that, you just realized there's no difference now between Tsaras and Erchin. It comes down now to be identical with one another. Meaning, consider in the case of Erchin, I have my Ne'erach, the subject of the Erchin. He's poor. And the Ma'arich, the one making the commitment, he's wealthy. He's going to be giving the Karbanos of a wealthy person. I mean money. He's going to be giving the Erech of a wealthy person. So now what we've just done is that as we now have explicated the position of the Chachamim, so then the line of the Chachamim is, you know, Tsaras and Erchin, they're not the same. They are the same. Now it looks exactly identical to one another. So the Gemara's response, as we turn now to the top of Yuzayin Amid Beis, Chada Mitzorani, Umadir Ani, V'chada L'Ma'ute Mitzor Asher Madir Ani. Okay, so the Gemara says no. There is going to be a difference between Saras and an Erchin. In the case that we just outlined, you're right. There is no difference. In the case where the Mitzvah himself is an Ani, and the Madir, and the sponsor of it is Asher, so you can bring Karbonos of an Asher. And you are absolutely right. That looks exactly like Erchin. It's going to look just the same. Where the difference lies is in the following scenario. What if I flip that around? Let's say I have the Mitzvah himself being an Asher, and the Madir being an Ani. So under those circumstances, now Erchin and Saras are not going to look the same. Because in the case of Erchin, when I have the one making the commitment, so the Ma'arich, so when he's poor, so then that's it. He's going to be given a special consideration. And it's going to be totally irrespective of what the subject is. The subject's wealthy, the subject's poor, it doesn't matter. But when we talk about Saras, so here it's going to be different. It's going to be notably different. If the Mitzvah himself is an Usher, and along comes an Ani, and the Ani says, I want to bring his Karbanos, so under those circumstances, he has to bring a Karban Usher, even though he himself is poor. Now again, if he went to me for financial advice, I'd suggest, you know what? Don't go sponsoring other people's Karbanos when you're not in a position where you can afford it. Okay, fine. And that's, a little bit of common sense. But put the common sense aside for just a moment. The halacha is that in the case that Saras, it does not follow by Erchin. By Erchin, we're always going to follow the financials of the person making the commitment. By Mitzvah, here we have a scenario. In this scenario, so it's going to be notably different. When the Mitzvah itself is an Usher, and the Madir is an Ani, so the Madir now is committing himself to bring the Karbanos of the Usher, he has to bring the Karbanos of an Usher. So that's what the Gemara says, Chad Mitzvah Ani Madir Ani Chad Al-Mu'ute Mitzvah Usher U'Madiro Ani. And the Gemara says, well, look, what we learned is that we already saw a scenario in which a poor person by Mitzvah is going to be given a special dispensation, and not just the Mitzvah himself, but even the sponsor is going to be given a special dispensation. That's the case where the Mitzvah is an Ani and the sponsor is an Ani. So once we see that there is an extension of a dispensation for the Madir, so then I would say, so there's a dispensation in every case. And to that, Lefisha Matzinu, Hovis Rabbi is Rabbi Kamash Malan. Lefisha Matzinu, Be'erchen, Ani She'erech Sa'ashin, Osin Erechani, Yachalav Ze'akein, Tamalamri Imdalhu. And we also know, the Gemara adds another point, we also know that by Erechin, there is always a dispensation. Meaning when the one making the commitment is in a state of Anius, he's always given a special dispensation regardless of whether or not the subject of his erich is going to be wealthy or poor. So one would consider then that in the case of Saras, maybe the same thing is true. Maybe if the Madir is an Ani and the Mitzvah himself is an Usher, maybe we'll give him a special dispensation. And for that, we have the Pasuk Imdalhu. Imdalhu tells me, no, not in this case. In this case where the Madir is an Ani and the Mitzvah is an Usher, there the Madir has to give the Karbanos of an Usher. Okay. Ula Rebbe Damar Omer Ani Af Be'erchin Kain. Now let's go to the move to the position of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in the Mishnah says that when the cases of Erchin and Mitzvah run parallel one to another, so they're exactly the same. So Alma Amar Basar Chiyuva Degavra Azlinan. So what do you see according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi? According to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, what is going to be the driving force? Chiyuva Degavra, the obligation of the person. Meaning we start with the obligation of the person, we look at what his obligation is, and that sets it in stone. So if the person who is a Mitzvah is an Asher, it's a Karban Asher. The Madir has to bring a Karban Asher. If the Mitzvah is an Ani, so that's it. That sets the obligation in stone. So then the Madir only has to give the Karban of an Ani. And when it comes to Erchin, same thing. The one who is obligated, so his financials are going to be setting the standard in terms of how much he has to give. So the Gemara says, "V'halo tzricha kra lemu'ute hu." "Halo tzricha kra lemu'ute." So that means that according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, once that's the rule, I no longer need drushas. Hu lemu'ute mai. So the Gemara says, so now when we have the pasuk by Mitzvah, imdalhu, and according to the Chachamim, we had it for an exclusion. The exclusion, according to the Chachamim, was when the Mitzvah is a Asher and the Madir is an Ani. Fine. So that's how we use it according to the Chachamim. But according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, we don't need such a drasha because he has a very simple rule. We follow the Chiyuv Gavra. So my. So lemutim it's orani madira ashir. So the Gemara says according to Rav Yehuda Anasi, we'll use the word who in the following circumstance. The Mitzor himself is an ani. The one sponsoring is an ashir. So then I would have thought as follows. Well, if the Mitzor is an ani, so now the Chiyuv Gavra tells me the carbon is a carbon of an ani. So now I have a sponsor, and the sponsor now is a wealthy individual. I might have thought that he only has to bring the carbon of a poor person, since the Mitzor himself is a poor person. Kamash Malan. So the Chiddush is no. In that case, since the sponsor is wealthy, so then he has to bring the carbon of a wealthy individual. Okay. So what we've just done now is we've outlined various scenarios within Erchin and in Saras where I have the one making the commitment. I have the subject of the one making the commitment. What happens when there's a discrepancy where one is poor and the other is wealthy? And the various opinions amongst the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, what to bring under those circumstances. We are now in the Mishnah Yizayin Amud Beis Haya. Ani veheshir heshir veani nosin erech ashir. According to the Tanakhama, let's say your financial situation changes over the course of your commitment. And when you first made the commitment, you were poor. And then before you paid, you become wealthy. Or conversely, you were wealthy and you became poor. Nosin erech ashir. According to the Tanakhama, if at any point from the time you made the commitment to the time that you paid, you had a situation of wealth, you were in a position that you could have afforded your obligation. So under those circumstances, you are not given a special dispensation. You are not treated with the consideration of Hesed Yad. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ani ve'ashir v'chazer ve'ani, nosin erech ashir. Rabbi Yehuda goes a step further. Let's say you started poor at the time of your commitment. Then you become wealthy. Then you become poor once again. No saying erech ashir. Under those circumstances, since there was a point in the middle where you could afford your commitment, you have to pay as if you can afford that commitment. Avaba karbanos enu kein. So, however, it's not true when it comes to karbanos. We'll explain that better in a little bit. Afilo meis aviv inich lo ribos finaso b'yam uvalo beribos ein lehektish baklom. Now Rashi says this next line of the Mishnah is going back to Erchin. Now here what we're learning is as follows. Let's say you right now are in a position of poverty, but you can easily forecast that you're going to come into money, right? A great position to be in, right? How can you easily forecast? So the Mishnah over here gives a number of scenarios. Let's say that your father has money, you yourself have no money, and your father's about to die. So under those circumstances, so you can forecast that you're going to come into money. Or let's say your boat is at sea. And right now, you are in a position of poverty. The Gemara later on is going to ask the obvious question. If it's your boat, so then that means that you have assets. Why is that boat not considered part of your assets? But anyway, your boat is at sea, but when it comes into port and when it brings in your merchandise, you're going to have money. So those are circumstances where you currently are in a state of poverty, but the chances look really good that you're going to come into money. Ain't like just by clone. No. At that point, we don't predict. We don't try to forecast what your wealth is going to be. We look at the current statement that you have, and that will determine whether or not you're going to be given Hesed Yad or not given Hesed Yad. Let's start with the Gemara. Ani v'hashir hashir tasig ad anoder. Asher v'ani api asher tasig. So the Gemara cites two psukim in the Parsha of Erechin, specifically by Hesed Yad, that tells me that in terms of given the dispensation, so the in terms of given the dispensation, so it doesn't matter whether or not you were poor and then becomes wealthy. From there, asher tasig ad anoder, and asher ve'ani al pi asher tasig. In both of those circumstances, you're going to be giving the erech of somebody who is wealthy. Exactly how these drushas work, it's not totally clear. Rashi over here seems to be basing on the fact that it says al pi. Alpi means that the time that you verbalized and made the commitment, if at that point in time you were wealthy, okay, so you're no longer given the dispensation of Hesed Yad. And the first drasha of Asher Tasig Yad Hanoder, meaning from the first that seems to indicate the time of giving, right? Yad Hanoder, when he's actually handing you the money. Okay, not totally clear how the drushas work, but still the point is the same. From these two phrases in the Torah, we learn that if you have any time where you had money, you're chayiv to give the wealthy man's commitment. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Afilo ani ve'eshi v'chazer ve'ani nosin erech asher. Now, Rabbi Yehuda goes even one step further. If at the time where you made the commitment, you were poor, and at the time that you're paying, you're poor, but there was an interim period in the middle where you had money, you're no longer given the dispensation. My time at the Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Kra, v'yimachu me'erkecha, ashyehe b'machuso, mitchila v'atsofo. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to be in a state of poverty throughout in order to get this dispensation. The word hu, imach hu, means that you have to be in a constant state of poverty. And if you are not in a constant state of poverty, even though at the critical points, at the time of the commitment and the time that you're paying, you're poor, but if at any point in the time you had money, so you're not given the dispensation. Elamiata, so the Gemara says, are you right about this? That every time in the Torah we have the word hu, it means a constant state. I don't think it's true. Again, let's go back now to Art Saras and to the carbon mitzora. The pasuk says imdalhu ad sheyehe bedalus mitchila v'atzofo. So that means to say that when are you given a special dispensation as a mitzora, where you're going to be given the karbanos of a poor individual? Again, the one animal for an asham and the two birds for a chatas and ola. So you want to tell me that you're only given this dispensation if you're in a constant state of poverty? But that's not true. Now, maybe you want to argue, well, it is true. The Gemara says, I know it's not, based on the Mishnah in Negayim. The Mishnah in Negayim tells us that in terms of determining which karbanos you're going to be giving, the karban asher, the karban ani of the mitzara, it's all going to be dependent on your financials, but not at any point in time, but specifically when you're bringing the karban. Now, it happens to be there's a machlokas, which of the karbanos are we talking about? But that means to say that there's only one point in time that we care about, the time that you bring the karban. So we don't care about what your financials were at any point in time. So you see that by tzaras, it's not the same as erchin. Now, we're going to come back and answer the question, but the first of the Gemara wants to just explore which karban is the critical karban when it comes to tzaras and determining your financials. So according to Rabbi Shimon, it's the karban chatas. Hakol holech achar chatas, if Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda amir hakol holech achar asham, Rabbi Yehuda says it's the asham, and Vitanya Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov amir hakol holech achar tziparim. There's a third opinion that it follows the birds that are given on day one. Right, two birds are brought, one is going to be shechted, the other one is going to be let free. So that is the machlokas tanaim. What is the critical moment in terms of determining mitzara ashir versus mitzara ani? Now the Gemara just doesn't want to let go of this point in terms of which carbon is the quote unquote the carbon. So I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Shoshim Mikra Echad Darsha. They're all learning out from the same pasuk. Asher lo sasig yado b'taraso. So the pasuk says that he was unable to afford it as he was in purification b'taraso. And now the Tanaim debate what exactly that means. Rabbi Shimon Savar Davar Mechaper Ma'ani Uchatas. So we're looking at in purification, the one that's creating the Mechaper, the Kapara, the Atonement. That's Karmel Chatas. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Davar Machsher Ma'ani Huasham. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we're looking for the thing which creates Hechsher, which puts him in a position that reinstates him back into the Jewish people, allows him to go back into the Beis HaMikdash. That's a Karmel Asham. Now, truth of the matter is that this is a little bit difficult to understand. If a mitzvah only brought the karban asham and not the other karbanos, he is not yet fully reinstated. So it is a little bit challenging to understand Rav Yehuda, but Rav Yehuda says that the ikar hechsher comes through the asham. And Rav Elazar ben Yaakov savar hagorim lo tahara, umayni utziparim. And as far as Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, when the pasuk says in purification, well, how does he get in process? The only way he gets into the process is the birds on the first days of his tahara process. That starts the process. So basically what we have is a machlokas between the Tanaim, which is the karban, but here's what we all agree. In terms of establishing whether he brings the wealthy mitzvahs karbanos or the poor mitzvahs karbanos, it's all going to be dependent on a moment. A moment of bringing the karban, granted we debate which karban it is, but it's the karban. And put that against Erechin, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, by Erechin, imachu means that you have to be in a constant state of poverty from the time that you committed all the way to the time that you pay. They're not the same. And meanwhile, we have the same expression by Tzaras. Elohu lamali. So the Gemara says now, what are we clearly going to say that when it comes to the word hu as it applies to Tzaras, we're not darshaning it in the same way. What do we do with the pasuk hu? So the Gemara says, well, that's easy. I say easy. It's easy. We're going to use it the way we used it above on the top of this Amud. So we'll just simply say that it is, you're going to fit it into either one of the drushas. Either the drush of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi above, or the drush of the Chachamim above. Remember, we at the beginning of our discussion this morning, we had the debate, what happens when the Madir is a Asher, the Mitzvah himself is a Nani, or reverse that. And what exactly do we say under those circumstances? And the Tanaim debated exactly how to plug in the word who into that debate. So the Gemara says, either way, we'll use the word who for that drasha, and so therefore we no longer have it available to be discussing what is going to set the financials of the Mitzvah. Elamiata v'hu aid. So the Gemara says, okay. So you're, again, the thesis of Rabbi Huda is that when you have the word who, it means you have to be in a constant state. So by Erchin, because the Torah says, Imdalhu, I'm sorry, that's the Pasuk by Mitzorah. By Erchin, since the Pasuk says, Immachhu, so that means that you have to be in a constant state of poverty in order to receive this dispensation. Let's see if that's true throughout other areas of Halacha. Let's talk about Eidus. Elamiata v'hu aid. Now you want to tell me that in order to qualify as a witness, you have to be kasher from the beginning to the end. Now what the Gemara here over here is making reference to is the following. We know that if a person, let's say, is asked to testify in court, he's subpoenaed to testify in court, and he makes a shvu and he makes an oath and he says, I don't have any testimony. I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't see anything. If at a later point in time he comes clean and he says, you know what, I didn't want to testify. So the Torah says under those circumstances, he has to bring a carbon chatas. It's a special carbon chatas. It's a carbon olaviyah, right? It's in the fifth parak of Ayikra. So the Gemara over here is considering at what point does he qualify to bring the special carbon olaviyah raid when he suppresses testimony. So mitchila v'atzofa. V'hu aid? Ashe kasha mitchila v'atzofa. So the Pasuk in Vayikra says, v'hu aid, and you want to tell me now that he only qualifies to bring a karban if he was eligible to testify from beginning to end. And is that right? V'chitem achanami, the Gemara says, now maybe it's right. The Gemara is about to prove to us it's not accurate. V'ha tanya, the Gemara quotes the following braisa. Hayodelo be'edus achelo nasa chasno v'nasa chasno. Let's say you had testimony for somebody before he becomes your son-in-law, and lo and behold, he becomes your son-in-law. Mm-hmm. Okay? So now, even though at the time when you witnessed the event, you and him were total strangers to one another, eligible to testify on his behalf, but now as you come to court, so now you can no longer testify because he married your daughter. And then a whole series of other cases where it's basically the same idea. You could speak at the time when you saw something, and then you no longer could when it was time to testify. You could see at the time when the event happened, and then you could become blind. Shafui v'nishtate, you were of sound mind, and then you lost it. Hariz apostle, in all these cases, you're going to be disqualified. Ava. Hayodelo edesach lonase chasno v'nase chasno v'acharkach mesabito. And now we're going to do the same thing, but here what we're going to do is as follows. You were eligible to testify at the beginning. You were eligible to testify at the end. There was a period in the middle where you could not testify. So examples. Examples, at the time of the event, he was a stranger to you. Then he married your daughter, and then Rachmanis, the daughter, died. Then now you're eligible to testify to him once again. He's no longer your son-in-law. We could do the same thing regarding he could talk, he couldn't talk, and then he found his voice again. He was able to see, and then he lost his vision, and then he was able to see again. He had his mind, he lost it, he found it once again. In all these cases, kosher. So that, in all these cases, is going to be kosher. Zeh haklal, kosher tchilas v'sof v'bekashrus, kosher. So as long as you had eligibility to testify at the point of seeing the event, and at the point of testifying, even though there was an interim period in the middle where you could not see the event, nevertheless, you're going to qualify as a witness. And if under those circumstances you try to suppress that testimony, you're going to be chayv karban. What did we just see together? That when it comes to Eidus, you do not have to be eligible during the entire interim, even though the Pasuk says, v'hu aid. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, that should mean that you were eligible throughout. But we just learned together, it's not true. So Shani Hasam, Namakra, O Ra'a, O Im, I'm sorry, O Ra'a, Im Lo Yagid. So the Gemara says, okay, but there the Pasuk tells us otherwise. The Pasuk says, when you saw or when you're telling it over. The Torah is clearly articulating that there are two critical points by Eidos. Okay. And you have it. Okay. So fine. So in other words, another exception to the rule. Ve'elahu lamali. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm with you. So then by Eidos, why then do we have the word who? Meaning because we just learned that this is not following the general rules of what who is coming to tell me. Who tells me that we need to be in a state of kashrus throughout, but by Eidos it's not true. So if it's not true, what are we doing with the word who? The Gemara goes on to answer. So let's say you see a whole group of people, and the two witnesses who you know have testimony about something with you, dealing with you, is with the group. And what you say is the following. I'm going to adjure all of you that you're going to swear to me that you don't have testimony. So over here, he's not pointing to the witnesses specifically. He's just simply pointing to the collective group. And even though the witnesses are in the group, that's not enough to bring about a karban. In order to bring a karban, in order for those witnesses to be obligated to bring a karban, when in fact they deny knowing the testimony, they have to be singled out. How do I know that? From the word who. Yachol yechayavim tamalam revahu eid. V'arei lo yichad eidav. You did not designate the eidim. Now, I would have said at this point in time, what does designation of the eidim mean? You have to point to the eidim themselves. The Gemara is a little more generous when it comes to what does it mean that you have to designate the witnesses. Yachol afilo amar kol mi tamalam revahu eid. V'arei yichad eidav. The Gemara is a lot more generous in terms of what does it mean to specify the witnesses. Same scenario, it's a group, but instead of saying, I'm adjuring all of you, I say, whoever knows testimony about me, so I am adjuring you, so that you are going, I'm subpoenaing you, or I'm going to have the court subpoena you, so that you'll come and testify. So when I say the words, call me, so now, even though they are part of the collective group, but because I said whoever knows the testimony, so that is a way of singling out the witnesses, even if I don't point to them directly. Like I said, the Gemara is a little more generous in terms of what it means to be miyached eidim. Ava b'karbanos eino kein. Okay, now, we are continuing the Gemara. We are on Yud Ches Amud Aleph, about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. Aviv meis v'hiniach lo ribui asher hu. So the Gemara says, if your father died and left you a lot of money, so you're not poor, you're wealthy. So Amar Rabbi Abba, Ema Miniach Lo Ribu Ribu. So the Gemara says, no, the father didn't die as of yet. So Pshita. So Kishaya Aviv Goses. So the Gemara says, we're talking about a scenario where the father is a Goses. So he is not dead, but Rachmanis, he's in the throes of death. So we see that death is imminent. So, and at that point in time, can you now say you're an usher? Ma'u Detemaya Rav Goses Im Lamisa. So I can make the argument, okay, it's a real Rachmanis, but we know what's going to happen. Death is imminent. And so as a result of that, so maybe Rav Goses in Lamisa, and so that should tell us now that that you are considered a wealthy individual. Kamash Malan. So the Chiddush is no. Meaning, now what the Chiddush is that presumably, I guess a simple way to say it, is that because Lamisa, the father's not dead as of yet, even though we know we can, the trajectory, the projections are very easy to tell, but nevertheless, lamaisa, you're not considered in a state of ashiras. Svinasa bayamavalo beribos asherhu. The Gemara now considers the other case in the Mishnah where the Mishnah's point is don't project. There are no projections when it comes to wealth. Either you're wealthy or you're not wealthy, and even though you could project wealth, it doesn't matter. Lamaisa, right now, you're not wealthy. So one example we just explained is where the father was dying. Still, that's a projection. The other case of the Mishnah is your boat's coming in. So that's a projection. Why is that a projection? You have a boat. So the Gemara says, "Beribos asherhu amar Rav Chisda kishayisa mukhreches umiskeres biyad acherem." So the Gemara says, well, it is your boat, but right now, currently, your boat is rented out to somebody else. Now, it's interesting. I know in accounting, so that boat is still yours. So, and right, and you can't exactly write off the boat just because you rented it out to somebody else. But in terms of the Gemara putting together a spreadsheet for you, so so when the boat is rented out to somebody else, right now it's not on your assets. So the Gemara says, okay, so but you're renting it out. You know what that means? Somebody's going to be paying you for the rental. So va'ika schirus, schirus ena mishtalemes ela libisof. So the Gemara says that's true, that there is going to be revenue generated by that boat you're renting out. However, we have a major debate on this topic. The Gemara says, let's assume right now that when it comes to rental, the rental money is not due until the end. It is not incrementally added with every minute that goes by, but rather its due date is going to be the first time they're actually obligated to pay you. So you don't have a boat. You don't have the revenue generated by the boat. So the Gemara says, okay, v'tepekle mishum sfina. So the Gemara says, okay. So you don't have usage of the boat, and you don't have the revenue generated by the usage. But can't you just simply put the boat down as part of your assets? So if the Gemara says, Hamani, Rebbe Lazar, you did not, Rebbe Lazar, Omer, Maya, Ikar, no sin lo simdo, Vechamar, no son lo chamoro. So the Gemara says, even though, yes, the boat is considered an asset, and when you're putting together a statement, you're certainly going to put the boat under one of the assets. However, when it comes for dispensation of whether or not you're wealthy or poor, if something is used as a means of your wages, so you don't put that down as part of your assets. So for example, I mean, we're going to learn this a little bit later in the Masechta, just a couple days from now, that if you're a farmer, so you're given the plow in order to plow the farm, meaning that is not going to be taken away from you. That's not even going, it doesn't seem to be even going to be put against you as one of your assets, because you just need it for your livelihood. So anything used and needed for your livelihood is not going to be put down as an asset. And so therefore, over here, that's why the boat is not going against you in terms of determining whether you are an usher or you're an ani. Okay. We are on the Mishnah Yud Ches Amud Aleph. Hashanim benidar ketzad. Yelad she'erich zakin, nosin erich zakin. V'zakin she'erich chesed yelad, nosin yelad erich. I'm sorry, nosin erich yelad. Okay, so a point that I know we've gone over numerous times, but the Mishnah over here is just explaining the opening Mishnah that we saw in yesterday's daf, and that is that when it comes to ages, when you are giving an erech of somebody else, so we're interested in not your age, but the age of that somebody else. Fine. Ha'erech menerach ketzad, ish erech isha, nosin erech isha, v'isha sherech ish, nosin erech ish. Okay, and as far as the next line of the Mishnah, this was on the opening Mishnah. The third point of the Mishnah, Erchin b'nerach, it just simply means that when it comes to the gender, if I'm going to be giving the erich of somebody else, so we're not interested in my gender, we're interested in their gender. So if they're a woman, I'm giving the erich of a woman. If they're a man, I'm giving erich of a man. Regardless, totally irrespective of who I am. V'erich b'zman ha'erich ketzad erichu pachus mi ben chamish v'nasi yosar ben chamish. Pachus mi ben esrim v'nasi yosar ben esrim. Nosim b'zman ha'erich. Now, in terms of how much money you're on the hook for, it depends on age. Age at the time when you make the pledge, or age at the time when you pay. The Mishnah is telling us it is all contingent on the time that you make the pledge. And even if you pay, let's say, a couple years later, and the person whose erech I'm giving now has went from one bracket to the next bracket. So under those circumstances, I'm still going to be paying at the time when I made the pledge, and his age at the time when I made the pledge. Tanur Rabbanan. The Gemara starts off with the Braisa. Atai kshita damim l'erchin. Margalis l'kalem v'lidom b'chvodo. Now, as we've been discussing a lot in this Masechta, there's erchin and there's damim. Now, they are both instruments of me giving money to the Beis HaMikdash. Erech, that means that I'm going to be giving the value, not of his market value, but based on age and gender. Damim, I'm giving his market value. And for many halachas, they share a lot of similarities. Well, I say a lot. How about two? Okay, but still, that's more than one. So, margalus l'kalim, lidom b'chvodom. So, in two areas in halacha in which they share, so one halacha is margalus l'kalim. We're going to go over this a little bit later in the Masechta as well. Basically, I have a precious stone, and we're going to be selling it, we're going to be appraising it, determining how much money I have. So, over here, in terms of its appraisal, so do we say, look, if we, let's say, if we just waited a little bit, right now the stone is at a really depreciated level, right? Gold right now is really cheap, but I know the gold market's going to go up. So do we wait? Or let's take the following into consideration. You know what? If I sell it here in the town that we live in, I'm not going to get a lot. But if we go to the big city, we'll get a lot more money. So Margalit Kalim tells me that no. That when I have a precious stone, we're appraising it based on its present value in its present location. The other halacha is Lidom Bechvoda. Lidom Bechvoda, as we already discussed in the beginning of the Masechta, when I make the erech of somebody's limb, that is a vital limb of which he couldn't live without, like his head, so that means to say that I'm going to be giving the erech of his whole body. So in this regard, Damim and Erchin are going to be compared one another. Yachol Nakish Erchin LaDamim Shehitin Kishas Nesina. So Tamalam Rekerech HaChayakum Eino Nosin Ela B'Zman HaErech. This is the area where they don't share the same halachas. And notably, when we're talking about Zman Nesina versus Zman Erech. By Erchin, Zman Erech. At the time when you make the commitment. By Damim, Zman Nesina. At the time when you're actually giving the donation. The Mishnah in Yurches Amad Aleph, Yom Shoshim Kilamata Himenu, Shnat Chamesh Vishnat Esrim Kilamata Mehem Shenemar. I'm sorry, even before I start the Mishnah. The problem is very simple. We have in the Torah, your Erech value going to be dependent on age and gender. Okay, gender is very simple. It's binary. It's male, female. I know there's, I know. The truth of the matter is that the Gemara already addressed that earlier. The Gemara talked about tumtum and androgynous, and as we know, by erchin, they don't have an erich because they are not either zachar vadais or zachar vadai nekeva vadais. So the Gemara already addressed that earlier. Okay, good. But in terms of age, so what is the age? So the Torah gives a menu. You'll open up to Perich of Zayin and Vayikra. So the Torah is going to give a menu. And if just to say it very simply. From 1 month to 5 years of age, 5 shkalim. From 5 years to 20 years of age, 20 shkalim. This is by male. From 20 to 60 years of age, 50 shkalim. And then if you're above 60, so then the precipitous drop going from 50 down to 15. And don't think that it's going to go past the Gemara at the end of this perek, where the Gemara is going to wonder, why is it that the man goes through such a precipitous drop after hitting 60? Now, for those of you who are above 60, my apologies to you. Baruch Hashem, I'm heading in that direction. I'm trending. Okay, by female, so the numbers are from 1 month to 5 years, 3 shkalim. From 5 years to 20 years, 10 shkalim. From 20 years to 60 years, 30 shkalim. From 60 years and above, 10 shkalim. Okay, so this is the schedule of how much the erech is for male and female and the various age groups. If you've been paying careful attention, you'll notice that there are 4 different brackets. 1 month to 5 years, 5 to 20, 20 to 60, and 60 and above. The issue is really simple. When you think about it, you realize that it obviously has to present itself. If you're 20 years of age, so where are you? Are you in the 5 to 20 bracket? Are you in the 20 to 60 bracket? Okay? Simple. So that's what the Mishnah here is addressing. So let's see the Mishnah inside again. Yom Shoshim Kilamata Himenu. So let's say you've hit the first bracket. You're 30 days old. You don't really realize that you're 30 days old. You're just but an infant. But if somebody's marich you, and you are now the erech, you are subject to the erech commitment. So what does that mean now? So what it means, says the Mishnah, is kilamata himenu. You haven't hit the bracket yet. Meaning in order to be in the bracket, you have to be in the age group. Meaning once, if you just hit the threshold, that's simply not enough. Shnat chamesh v'shnat esrim kalamata mehem. You're 5 years of age, you're 20 years of age, you're in the lower bracket. Shenemar, and the Mishnah says, now how do I know this? Meaning, we're going to have to go in one direction. We can't go in both directions. So how do I know that at 30 days, at 5 years, at 20 years, how do we know that we're pushing you down into the bracket below? And by the way, when we're pushing the 30-day-old to the bracket below, meaning he's in no bracket, meaning he hasn't even hit the first bracket yet. So the Mishnah actually makes the argument. The Mishnah is making an argument. Rare. Mishnah just normally gives us halachas. But the Mishnah makes an argument. Imi ben shishim shana v'mala. So in from 60 and above. Hari anu lemeid mekula mishna shishim mashna shishim kalamata emenu. Because the Torah says shishim above, meaning the way the Mishnah understands the Pasuk is that not at 60, but once you're above 60, so now you're in the last bracket. So Ashnan Chamesh Vishnan Isrim Kilamata. So that means that when you're 60, you're in the 20 to 60 range. And now we're just going to work down from there. So if 60 means that you're in the bracket below, so what does 20 mean? You're in the bracket below. What does 5 mean? You're in the bracket below, etc., etc. So Ashnan Chamesh Vishnan Isrim Kilamata Imenu. Hein. Imasa Shan Shishim Kilamata Mimeno Lahachmir Nasa Shan Chamesh Vishnan Isrim Kilamata Mimeno Lahakel. Now the Mishnah notes, now wait 1 second. You see, even though the argument is good, but there is a flaw in the argument. Because consider, by taking somebody who is 60 years of age and putting him in the lower bracket, so does that represent a stringency or a leniency? Clearly, that's a stringency. Because now instead of paying 15, now he has to pay 50. So if we do that now for the next series, meaning when the person is 20, so if we're going to put him in the lower bracket, that's a leniency. So in other words, on one hand, I do hear the point, says the Mishnah. On the other hand, how can I compare putting a 6-year-old in the bracket below, which is a chumrah, and putting a 20-year-old in the bracket below, which is a kula? That's a problem. So Tam Lamar, Shana Shana L'Gzera Shava. So the Gemara says, you're right. So if all I had was just simply some sort of argument, logical argument, and a chinami, the point is excellent. What do I have over here? Gzera Shava. Every single time the Torah gives us an age bracket, it says the word shana, as the Gemara in a moment is going to tell us unnecessarily, and so therefore we have a bedrock zereshava. So mashana amur b'shnas shishim klamata, shana amur b'shnas chamesh v'shana esrim klamata mimenu bein lakel bein lachmir. Okay, so that's how the Mishnah argues that when you are at any border of the age brackets, you're going to be put below in the lower bracket. Rabbi Lozar Amar Ashi Yiserus Al Shanim Chodesh V'Yom Echad. Now, Rabbi Lozar Shita is that in order to go into the next grouping, it's not just simply being a day above, but rather a day and a month. Okay, we'll explain Rabbi Lozar a little bit later on. Mufna. The Gemara's first.
Usually, when it comes to time, like Shiva or Brasmila, we have Mitzasukula.
Right.
And you go up. This right.
Right. The Gemara at the end of this discussion is going to be discussing how we assess the year and exactly at what point in time the year comes to an end. Okay. Right now, let's keep it localized. Let's just right now deal. The Gemara is going to extend it to other areas of halacha, but for right now, let's just keep it to the topic of bracketology and erchin. Mufna, the Gemara says that this Gzereshava is rock solid. Dila Mufna Ikala Mifrach, because you can easily ask now, Kidabarchinan, Shana Shana. I'm sorry, Kidabarchinan. So, meaning the, without it being a Gzeremufna, I'm sorry, let me explain this better. Gzeremufna means that when we're using words to create a Gzereshava, so either the words are necessary to the simple Pshan the Pasuk, which means that the words are, the Gzereshava is not solid, or the words are totally extraneous. And the Torah could have said it without using those words. Under those circumstances, that Gzera Shava is called a Gzera Shava Mufna. Rock solid, and it's impervious to any kind of attack or argument. So the Gemara says, because if you don't say it's a Gzera Shava Mufna, so Mifrach Kedabarachinan. So we already know what the question is. The Mishnah already told us what the question is. When I'm moving brackets, it's not always consistently a Kula or a Chumra. Sometimes it's a Kula, sometimes it's a Chumra. Shana Shana Yaserik Zive. Lema Masisin de Loka Rebbe, Di Rebbe Amar Adva Adbechlal. Now the Gemara says, now what about the opinion of Rebbe? Rebbe says that when we always give a range, we mean up to and including. Now let's take Pesach as an example. Now the Torah tells us what the brackets of Pesach are, day 1 and day 7. Now how do you understand that? Is that include day 1 and day 7? Now I think we all know the answer. I think we do. But for a moment, the Gemara is going to entertain. It's an unusual Havamina. Maybe it means from 1 to 7, but not including 1 and 7, making Pesach then only 5 days. It's an unusual Havamina. So I might have considered that day 1 does not include day 1, and day 7 does not include day 7. Kinyan Shenemar me rosho ve'ad raglo. Rosho ve'lo rosho bechlal, raglo ve'lo raglo bechlal. By tzaras. There's a form of tzaras where it covers the entire body from head to toe. Does that include head and does that include toe? So, rosho v'lo rosho b'chlal, ragla v'lo ragla b'chlal. And interestingly enough, for reasons which we're going to explain in just a moment, it doesn't include the head and it doesn't include the toe. So, tam lomar ad yom echad ad yom ha'achad v'esrim l'chodesh ba'erev. So even though that we could have entertained such a thought when it comes to Pesach, the Braisa rejects it. Now, why does the Braisa reject it? Because not only does the Torah say from day 1 to day 7, the Torah also gives us dates on the calendar. So once the Torah gives us dates on the calendar from the 15th to 21st, so now we know. It's 7 days. Pesach is 7 days. Okay. Everyone can breathe a sigh of relief. Pesach is in fact 7 days. Even in the Hava Mina, like what was the Gemara entertaining? The Gemara entertaining was that the first day of Pesach is not Pesach and you're eating matzah on not Pesach. Okay, but anyway, it's a worthwhile endeavor to try to imagine what the Hava Mina was. But the Torah gives its dates on the calendars. Rebbe Omer, this is what we want to see. We brought this for the opinion of Rebbe. Rebbe Omer, Nitzarech Rishon, Rishon Bechlal, Shvi Bechlal. When the Torah gives numbers, it includes those numbers. When the Torah says the Pesach is from 1 to 7, it includes the numbers 1 and number 7. So you see over here that Rebbe holds Ad Ve'ad Bechlal. So how now does that transfer to our discussion and the brackets? I feel the Tamer Rebbe, Shekulim Mishkalei Krai. Michti, Ksiv Mi Ben Chodesh Ve'ad Ben Chamesh Shanim. So Sumi Ben Chamesh Lamali. Hilkach Ishtak Lulahu. So the Gemara says, look, even if I hold like Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, where it's Ad Ve'ad Bechlal, there's no way to make sense of our Pesukim. Because the Torah double dips. The Torah says from day 30 to year 5. Then the Torah says from year 5 to year 20. So even if you're whole Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, and even if you say Ad Ve'ad Bechlal, we're stuck. Where does 5 go? Oh, it's included in the first bracket. Because Ad Ve'ad Bechlal. Oh, it's also included in the second bracket. Because Ad Ve'ad Bechlal. So you realize that we are at an illogical impasse. And so therefore, even according to Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, we have to go in a direction. Amar Amar, Rishon v'lo, I'm sorry, Rosh v'lo Rosh v'chlal, Raglav v'lo Raglav v'chlal, Minalan. Now, by Tzaraas, the Gemara understood it as like Pashut, that when we say Tzaraas from head to toe, it's one of the Tzaraas of the Torah, it doesn't include the head, it doesn't include the toes. Like, how? How do we assume that that's true? So, Ibai Semeshani Simanim, De Gufo Mi Simanim, De Rosho. So the Gemara says, well, there are two arguments that we can make. One is that the laws of Tzaraas and the diagnosis of Tzaraas of the head is different than the rest of your body. Different simanim are going to be guiding the principles of whether it is or is not Tzaraas. And Ibai Sem Lachomare Ene HaKohen. Another possibility is as follows. If let's say you have Tzaraas underneath your hair, right? Assuming it's still there. So if you have Tzaraas underneath your hair, it's not going to be Mar'e Kohen. Kohen won't be able to see it. And if you have Tzaraas between your toes, now again, you can stretch them out and pull them out, but as you are as currently constituted, it's not Mar'e Enei HaKohen. So that's why another argument why it is that the head and the toes are not necessarily included. Rabbi Elazar Omer Achi Yiseros Al Shanim Chodesh V'Yamechad Tanya Rabbi Elazar Omer Neimar Kan Lamala V'Neimar Lahalan Chodesh V'Malam Alahan Mi Ben Chodesh V'Yamechad Afkan Mi Ben Afkan Chodesh V'Yamechad. So the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Elazar, how come he adds another month in order to move from one bracket to the next? Because we learn it from the Parsha of Pidyon HaBen. By Pidyon HaBen, the Pidyon HaBen does not occur at day 1, but rather it occurs on day 31. Not even day 30, day 31. Ve'ema kiyasa mahasama chad yuma afkan chad yuma in King Zereshava Mayahani. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. So it's true for Pidyon HaBen, it's not day 30, it's day 31. Okay, but that just simply means one day additional. So then, according to Rabbi Eliezer, why don't we just simply say one day additional? So the Gemara says, yeah, but it's Gzera Shava. So the Gzera Shava is that just like by Pidyon HaBen, it's 31 days. So too, by all the other benchmarks, it's going to be 31 days into it.
But his explanation doesn't explain the being five being mentioned
twice. Correct. It's just an additional month that he adds in order to move to the next bracket. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, I know that was a big sentence, but in five different areas of halacha, I even numbered it, and I got it wrong. In five different areas of halacha, so it's going to be me'es leis. And that means as follows, that when you say a year, so you can understand it in one of two ways. Number one, it's calendaric. Meaning, I say calendar, meaning not dependent on you at all. It just simply depends on the calendar. So, for example, you're appointed king. You're appointed king in the month of Adar. Nisan rolls around. What year are you in your reign? You're in the second year of your reign. even though you've been sitting on the throne for 3 weeks. Okay? So in other words, one way to look at a year is just simply it's all calendar based. Like the example I just gave. And the other way to look at a year is it's going to be totally contingent on you and the day in which you're born. And then fast forward 1 year ahead, and then when you complete that year, meaning the next day, right? Birthdays are a great example, because when you celebrate your birthday, you are completed a year and a day, right? So the other way to look at a year is totally based on the event in which you're looking at, and then going a year from there, okay? So in five areas of halacha, when we talk about a year, it's not calendar based. I mean, obviously it is, but in other words, the calendar is not going to determine when the year is. You're going to determine when the year is, the day in which you're born, or et cetera, et cetera. Let's go over the five halachas quickly. I know the hour's late. So shana amur bekachim. So when it comes to a karban, many karbanas have to be brought within its first year. Karban Pesach, for example. So it has to be a goat or a sheep, male goat or male sheep, within its first year. So that means that after it's a year old, so that's it. No longer eligible to be brought as Karban Pesach. So it is the year over there is the year from its birth. Okay. Two. Shana Amur Bate Are Choma. When you buy a house in a walled city, you have a year to buy it back. If you don't buy it back within a year, you lose it forever. The halacha is Bate Are Choma. Actually coming up later in our Masechta. Under those circumstances, the year is from the time that you purchased it. Meaning, and it's 365 days, but you understand. It's a lunar calendar. So 354 days plus one from the time that you purchased it. Shtei shanim shebesad shebestei achuza. When you lease a land, an ancestral property, stei achuza, you can only buy it back after 2 years with the lessee. And so over here again, the 2 years are going to be 2 years from the date that you leased it. Sheishanim shebe Eved Ivri. Eved Ivri is going to be working for you. He's working for you maximum 6 years. Those years are from the day that he started working. A year later, that's year one. A year later, year two, et cetera, et cetera. V'chein shebe ben shebe bas. Also, when it comes to children, maturation at 12 and 13, that's going to be based on their birthday. Now, kula me'es leis. All of them follow the pattern of me'es leis, like I explained. Now, shana amur bekachim. I'll do this part quickly. Shana amur bekachim minalan amur avacha bar Yaakov amakar keves ben shnaso shalo velo shalman yana olam. So you'll see a common theme throughout all these drushas. Shnaso, its year, meaning it's not going to be based on any specific month, but it's going to be based on its year. Shana amur bebatei arichom adichsiv atom shnas mem karo. His sale. Mem karo shalo velo shana lemin yana olam. Now this one's a little bit more complicated. You'll see a long Rashi over here. I'll say it succinctly. It's possible that you're going to be leasing a property and getting three crops from the property within 2 years. How can you get three crops in 2 years? Because when you first leased it, already it is ready to be harvested. So that would be harvest number one. Then the next year is going to be harvest number two. And the conclusion of the second year, so I planted it, it grew, and before that second year is up, I can harvest it now a third time. So it's possible to have three harvests within 2 years, but only assuming, of course, that it's me'es la'es. It's from the time that I leased it. Sheisha be'eved ivri dichsiv sheshanim yavod v'shvi zimnen d'b'shvi z'nam yavod. Now, it could very well be that he's working in the seventh year. How can he be working in the seventh year? Meaning, because if I went by the calendar year, so it could be that he's in his seventh year. How can it be that he's in his seventh year? Because in determining his 6 years of work, we start from not which year we're in, but which day he started working. And so from then to then, that's year number one. From that point to the next point, year number two, et cetera, et cetera. So he can be working 6 years, but it could fall within seven calendar years. Shebem v'shebebas kula me'es la'es. And as far as Ben and Bas is concerned, it's me'es la'es. Amai hilchasa. So the Gemara wants to know, Ben and Bas, what is that in reference to? Am Rav Gidol, Am Rav le'erchin. It relates to erchin. Rav Yosef Am le'pirkin, the Yotzi Dolphin, talks about maturation in terms of becoming a bar and bas mitzvah. Am le'abayla Rav Yosef mi'plikdu. Now, are we debating over here? The Gemara says, no, we're not debating. Am le'lo. Ana Am rechada, v'hu Am rechada. We're in agreement with one another. Now you know that we know that Rav says that the perek in Nida, which is called perek Yotzei Dofen, that's the name of the perek. So we know that he subscribes to the idea that when determining the maturation of a boy or a girl, boy at 13, girl at 12, so it's meis leis, and everyone agrees to that. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, then how come over here in our Braisa, in the middle of the Amud, how come you're insistent on explaining that as it relates to Erchin when you're not disagreeing with the halacha? So Amar li yosi dofin dum yadahanach, malahanach tiksive, afhanach tiksive. So the Gemara says, because it makes a lot more sense that we're talking about Erchin in the Braisa, because if you look at the common theme of all five items that are listed, what's the common theme? Things in the Torah, right? A carbon being a one-year-old, the bate arichoma, the 2 years of leasing, 6 years of an eved ivri, and then ben umbas. It has to be something written in the Torah. Bar and bas mitzvah, not written in the Torah, right? We know it because of a mesorah, but not written in the Torah. So that's why it's better to say that the Bryce is talking about erchin. So Isa gadach deksiva hay shebe ben shabas shebezach shebe nekeva. I'm sorry. Do me dahanach. Ma hanach deksiva hanach deksiva viidach. Now, how can you make another argument? The Bryce is talking about bar and bas mitzvah. Isa gadach deksiva hay shebe ben shabas shebezach shebe nekeva mi baile. If the last point of the Bryce was talking about erchin, why would the Bryce use the words ben and bas? The Bryce should use erchin terminology, which is zachar unekeva. So it makes more sense to say that's talking about ben ubas. And finally, as long as we're here, let's just finish the perek. So maishna nekeva dechi mizkena kaima atilsa, or maishna zachar delo kai atilsa. The Gemara ends off this perek with just such a wonderful question, and the Gemara is making the following observation. Take a look over here at Sorry. If you take a look at the charts of how much an erech is valued at, so you'll notice that when it comes to a male, so let's start with the female because it's easier. When it comes to a female, from 20 to 60, from 20 to 60, it's going to go from 30 down to 10. So a drop off of 1/3. So if I go from a male, if I go from the 20 to 60 to 60 and above, we went from 50 down to 15. And so over here, what a precipitous drop when it comes to the male. And the Gemara wants to know, how come for the female, you're going from 30 to 10, which is only, I mean, it's still a drop. In other words, it's a third, but it's significantly less as a drop-off than the male, which is going from 50 to 15. And the Gemara wants to know, what is that all about? And the Gemara gives a wonderful answer. So the Gemara says, Amr Chizki Amri Inshi. You know, people say, Saba Bebesa, Pacha Bebesa. When you have an old man in the house, so what you have is Pacha. Pacha, Rashi says, Shever She'enu El Lamasa. Okay, you have something which is broken and basically a burden. Rashi gives another pshat as well. Anyway, okay, useless. So, okay. And Safta Bebesa, but if you have an old woman in the house, Sima Bebesa. You still have a treasure, right? Rashi calls it a treasure. Matmon Sheyachola Truch V'la'asos Malacha B'ziknusa. She still can do a lot in the house. And so the old man, sorry. Hadron Lachesagad, that is the end of the fourth parak of the Masechta.